Everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories. You can find the podcast on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and it's also freely available as a download wherever you get your podcasts. Today, as always, I'm really excited to talk with yet another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story with us. So I'd like to say hello to Caitlin. Hey, how are you today? Nice to have you on the show.
I am awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to get to meet you and to get to speak a little bit about my experiences.
Well, great. So let's dive right in. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what keeps you busy.
Okay, awesome. Hi, everybody. My name is Caitlin Franchini. I am from Atlanta, Georgia. I am currently a master's student at Georgia State University in Atlanta. I'm studying speech language pathology. I am actually hoping to specialize in fluency disorders after I graduate. I am currently in my second year of the program. I am doing my one of my externships right now at a high school. When I am not studying or in therapy sessions at the high school, I love to cook. I love to bake. I'm very passionate about food. I've gotten very into recipe development recently, making my own recipes. I love to hike. I love to travel and to just try new things. I'm always kind of searching for like the next new experience.
So, yeah. Oh, fun. So you sound like a risk taker.
Sometimes, yes.
So what got you interested in wanting to become a speech therapist? What drew you into that field?
So speech language pathology is something that I got into very much based on my personal experiences as a woman who stutters. I did speech therapy for a long time. I started, you know, I've been stuttering since I can remember, I think since I was about 3 years old. So speech pathology has been a big part of my life since I was receiving services for a while. I guess I can just tell the whole story.
Please.
So I've been stuttering since I can remember, since I was about three. I did speech therapy for in schools until I was about to go to middle school, and then I wanted to stop. I was tired of being pulled out of class and singled out. I felt like I was missing all the fun parts of school, so they're not gonna pull you out during literature or math. So I just wanted to stop, and my parents and my teachers listened and they pulled me out. Then I entered middle school, which is not a fun time for anybody, but especially right. If you are someone who stutters. So I'm originally from Canton, Georgia, which mm-hmm. is closer to the North Georgia Mountains area, which when I was a kid was pretty small. So I was the only person I knew who stuttered. It was just me. Mm-hmm. There weren't any other kids in my school who stuttered that I knew of. So I felt very singled out. I got bullied a lot in middle school. Very frequently, I didn't have very many friends, and the ones I did have, I kind of clung to very heavily. And just did not have the best experience there. I'm a very extroverted and chatty kind of person. I love to meet people. I love to talk. But middle school kind of made me draw into myself. I was so scared to talk and to be bullied or made fun of. So I became much more reserved. When I was about to go to high school, I was like, I can't handle this anymore. So I actually transferred high schools. My mom worked at another high school in the county. So I had the option. I could go to the high school that I lived near, or I could go to her high school. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe a fresh start was needed. I was like, maybe I can just start over. that high school had more opportunities, AP classes, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I transferred and just totally started over. And that, I look back on that as one of the best decisions I've ever made. Mm. It was a much safer space. I made a lot of friends. I felt like I didn't have to constantly explain myself. All of my teachers knew, all my friends knew. It wasn't a big deal. I actually ended up joining my high school speech team, which because I just needed a way to meet people and to also get back to being comfortable with public speaking. Mm-hmm. So I joined the speech team. By my sophomore year, I actually ended up being captain of that team.
Wow.
And by my senior year, I was like a state ranked speaker. So
that
was a really big accomplishment, especially, I mean, for anybody, but especially someone who had so much fear around public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I kind of took a look at my life and so much had changed. I had all these opportunities I would have never had before. I had all these friends, all of like college offers to go do public speaking. And I realized that a lot had changed, but my stutter had not. That is something that had remained. So I realized that I wanted to be able to help others who communicated differently than what is typical. I wanted them to feel that same self-acceptance and confidence that I did. So that kind of put me on this path. And, you know, here I am 6 years later, I am almost finished. I finished up in August.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you must be so excited.
I'm very excited, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, you just unpacked a whole bunch. Yeah, you said when you made the decision to go to the one high school, that you said it was like a fresh start and you were much more comfortable. And you said that like the teachers and the other students and your friends and whatnot knew that you stuttered. Mm-hmm. How did you disclose it, or how did people know?
I disclosed to my friends for sure, but I, as far as teachers, I honestly think my mom told them ahead of time. Mm-hmm. She's been such a big supporter of me. And even when I was a kid, I remember her telling family and advocating for me to let me have the time that I needed.
Mm.
And so I think, especially my freshman year teachers, when I first got there, I think she told them. Which honestly, I was already so scared that like that first week because I had just transferred, that kind of made it one less thing that I had to handle, which was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've often thought about that and talked to other people, especially, you know, women. And I don't know if I particularly like having somebody else like introduce me and saying, oh, this is Pam and she does this and that and she stutters, you know. Yeah. I just feel like kind of funny having somebody else disclose something about me that I think I should, you know. So yeah. Like I've always wondered, like, what's the best way to deal with that, you know, because I think sometimes people think that they're doing me a favor or a kindness by kind of like warning people, you know. Yes. But you know, so I mean, it's, so what did you think like when your mom introduced you? I mean, you just said it kind of made it easier, but you know, how did the kids in the class react, or how did the teachers react by hearing about it?
Now I would 100% agree with you. I don't like people to introduce me or to disclose that for me. But I also think now I am at a much, much different place than I was at that time. You know, self-acceptance is a huge journey, is something that I've learned. And even for me personally, it is something that has come and gone. You know, your relationship with your stutter is constantly changing. I think at that time, I still was, like, I was not as accepting of myself and I didn't want it to be prominent. And I also, at that time, I mean, I will be honest, I was presenting with a lot more avoidance behaviors than I am now. Mm-hmm. I am someone that if I want, I can stutter very, very covertly. Like I was very big into word substitution. I was very big into like, even like playing stupid and like forgetting the word. Like I presented with a lot more avoidance behaviors at the start. So I was able to stutter very covertly for a while there. And then kind of gradually into maybe those first 2 years of high school is when I started to open up more and be more honest about my stutter. But no one really made any comments on it in particular until I decided to share. Some people would be like, oh, like I've heard, like I heard you stutter, it's totally fine. And then I would have other people who would say, oh, like you don't stutter, I've never heard it, which, you know, in itself is very interesting because like they think that's a compliment, but that can also be very like invalidating of your identity.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, you know, like trivializing it, you know, when for us, at least for me, like I was consumed by it when I was young and I was just so like worried that if I stuttered, if I exposed my stutter, you know, people would think there's something wrong with me or that I wasn't as intelligent as other people, you know. So it's funny, we have those fears, which are real. You know, so if somebody else invalidates us, it leaves us, you know, second guessing ourselves. And, you know, it really, I mean, for me, it did a number on my self-esteem. And I too was very covert. I did the same things, you know, tried to switch words, you know, and try to do that, you know, on the fly, which is, you know, it's not always easy, but it helps you develop a great vocabulary, right?
Yes, I am a walking thesaurus at this point.
Yes, I mean, I felt like that too when I was younger. But I also, just like you said, I avoid it a lot of things because it was easier. And, you know, when I was young and started stuttering around five, I think it was for me, I received very negative feedback from my dad. Like he would yell and scream at me and tell me to stop and we don't talk like that. And he'd get so angry that I didn't want to get that kind of feedback from my parent anymore. So the only way that I could think of to not stutter was to not talk. And, you know, I developed that avoidant behavior early on. And, you know, I hid my stuttering for years and until I just decided that I can't do this anymore. I felt so fake, you know, and inauthentic that I was just like, I can't do it anymore. It's just like, it felt like I was just, you know, robbing my personality and, you know, robbing the world of who I really was, you know. Does that make any sense to you? Can you relate to that?
Yes, I can. Like I said, you know, self-acceptance is something that's always kind of waning. I really relate to that of like, there was a time, especially when I was an undergrad in college, of like ping ponging between like, I'm a very proud stuttering woman to like, oh, but in this situation, I need to be more covert, to going back to, I'm very proud to be who I am, be like, oh, but I should probably hide it here to make this easier. Like just going back and forth, but then also wanting to be myself, but then not knowing if everyone wants yourself is, it's so confusing, constantly towing this line.
Right. Yeah. And like, I worked in a school for a while and it was like, you know, I had to decide intentionally who I was going to be comfortable telling that I stutter. I mean, sometimes it was just like obvious that I stuttered, but you know, if I wasn't talking about it, other people didn't talk about it, you know, like there was like this unwritten rule that, well, we're not going to bring it up if Pam's not bringing it up. But I remember in that school environment, like for the most part, I was pretty okay with like you know, office staff and colleagues and even, you know, the guidance counselor and some teachers knowing, but I was very uncomfortable stuttering openly in front of the principal and like, forget it around like anybody like the superintendent and stuff. So like you, like, you know, I picked and chose which authority figures I felt safe enough to do. And that's exhausting to do that all the time, right?
Yes, it's mentally draining. Like it's very cognitively taxing.
Yes, yes. Good way to put that. You know, like I felt all the time like I was, you know, mentally, doing mental gymnastics all the time. And sometimes I would get so caught up in thinking what my next word was going to be or rehearsing it that I found myself unable to listen to my communication partner, right? And then
mentally scripting.
Yes. So like I was like, when it would be my turn to join in the conversation, I wouldn't know what the conversation was anymore because I had lost track of it because I was trying to prepare mentally.
Yep.
It's amazing what we try to do, right?
I can really heavily relate to that.
Yeah. Now you mentioned that right now you're doing like an internship or a practicum. I forget what you called that. But you're doing high school therapy?
Yes, I'm doing high school right now. This week I've been there for about a month now.
How's that going?
I'm really enjoying it. I honestly wasn't sure if I would ever see myself in a school setting, just because I am so passionate about fluency, but I'm really happy. I'm enjoying it to maybe have some other kind of option. A lot of the work I'm doing is with the special ed department. So I'm getting to do a lot of like functional communication, a lot of like life skills, job training. On Fridays, we go on field trips in the community and we practice things like ordering and asking questions of sales staff. So I really am enjoying, like, it's a very different kind of program, but I love it because I do feel like I'm getting to like train these kids on skills that are going to really help them in life. So I'm enjoying it way more than I thought it was going to.
So do you think maybe that might be a population that you might wind up working with?
It's definitely an option. I'm still kind of at that point where I like am interested in so many things, but like the true passion is fluency, but I could see myself at some point going into a school if I ever want like the change of setting or something.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, it's kind of cool. Like the school, you get to work the school day, you get school holidays off, you know.
Yes, so, it was very appealing.
Yes. Now in your high school therapy, do you have any kids that stutter?
I don't. And I wish I did. But also a lot of people who stutter are not still receiving therapy in high school. I feel like if I were in elementary or maybe even a middle school, there'd be more of that. A lot of my friends who are in elementary schools are seeing lots of fluency clients. So I'm a little jealous of that because I would love to have some, but I'm also really enjoying just where I'm at right now.
So. Yeah. So, and again, with the high school students, do you tell them that you stutter?
Sometimes, if I think that they're noticing a lot of it, or I don't always self-disclose right off the bat, especially because I'm working a lot with special ed kids, and a lot of the times they don't even pick up on it. They're not really paying attention to me.
Right.
But if I feel like it is like affecting my communication at all, or if they're noticing it, I will say something. And I do have some kids who are not in the special ed department, and with them, I typically do go ahead and disclose, especially because it just makes it easier. And I do think it helps them maybe relate to me a bit more. I'm not someone who was talking at them. I'm someone who kind of understands the experience of being in speech therapy, especially as an older student.
I do.
And then when I worked at the Georgia State Speech and Hearing Clinic, I mainly worked with adults, and I always would disclose.
Yeah. What's it like working with adults that are older than you? Is that kind of uncomfortable or weird? Or do the adults feel like she's not qualified? She's too young.
I was a little uncomfortable at first when I first started, but now I don't really view it. I don't feel uncomfortable. But when I first started, I was very, very nervous just because I'm from the South. We're very much, instructed to respect our elders, and our elders know all. And then I had to switch to the role of a service provider. And this is what I need you to do. And I need you to do it this way, which was very interesting. I do feel more comfortable with it now. And I honestly haven't ever had a client who was oh, she's too young. I've been very fortunate. All the ones that I've had really do want to work on their objectives, and that they are willing to do pretty much whatever I wanted them to. I know that's not the case for everybody, but I've been very fortunate in that department.
How do you set objectives for a person in therapy?
So really, it's just taking a look at their I don't love the word deficits, but areas of growth, things that things that are impacting their everyday function, or especially if you're working with adults, they will sometimes come in with, I really want to work on this. I really want to work on taking turns in a conversation. I really want to work on word finding if they have aphasia. So it's really just seeing things that are impacting their everyday communication, and then just kind of writing it in a formalized, easy to measure way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I guess the reason that I asked is that, I'm always curious, if a speech therapist, whether a novice or a seasoned therapist, do you work with the client to kind of mutually develop the goals, or do you always feel as the SLP, I have to set the goals and see if the client is interested in that?
I really enjoy the more team approach. Now that I'm in a school, it's not as much with the child as it is with the parents. Talking to them and what they would like them to work on. But at the end of the day, you are the professional, but I really do love getting input. And just because, the therapy is not for me, it's for the client. So when I was in the Georgia State Speech and Hearing Clinic, there it was a little different kind of setting, because a lot of those clients had already been there. So I would take the goals from the previous semester and kind of carry them over, maybe update them slightly. But I do think that therapy is the most effective when you are taking into account your client's perspective and what they want to work on. But at the end of the day, you need to use your clinical judgment about what's the most effective.
Makes sense. Now you mentioned that working with the high school students, that often you're communicating with the parents to see what they want or would like for the kids. So it brings me back to when you mentioned when you were in middle school, you wanted to stop therapy because you didn't like being pulled out, especially out of, classes that you really liked, and you said that your parents kind of understood that and kind of went along with that. So I just guess I'm interested, what do you feel about parents of high school students kind of guiding the therapy instead of the student guiding their own therapy?
Like I said, a majority of the students I work with are in the special ed department. So I do think that a lot of them really don't have any preference about what they are working on. And I do enjoy getting to work with the parents, just because I see them at school. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, children act differently in a home setting. They communicate differently in a home setting. So mm-hmm. I do feel like parents are able to provide an extra piece to the puzzle that I just don't have. Some right. kids, you know, will come to school and they won't really want to communicate with me. And then they'll get home and they're chatterboxes. So I really do enjoy having that kind of parent piece of it, mm-hmm. Just to kind of get a better idea of like who the child is, how they communicate, and what they could benefit from.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever have parents observe therapy sessions?
I've only been there for a month now, but I've never had a parent observe. I don't think that's typical.
Oh, okay. I remember when I was doing therapy with grad students. I remember that like the grad student supervisor would be like behind like a one-way mirror. And I just didn't like that, you know, like I felt like he was spying on me, you know. And then like sometimes like he would just like come right into the therapy session and say like, why don't you try this, or you know, what about if we did that? And I was like, this is really weird, you know, like I'm working with a student clinician, but yet you're here like I didn't like it, you know?
Yeah, it still is kind of like that. Except mm-hmm. now it's not always a mirror. Now it's more of like a camera system, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So
they're not right there and they don't jump in as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just didn't like that because it just felt kind of creepy to have this like voice from the beyond, you know, getting involved when I felt like they weren't really involved. They weren't present. They weren't like part of the conversation, you know. Anyway, jumping backwards again, you said that you had felt really isolated as a kid because you thought that like you were the only one that you stuttered. You hadn't met anybody else.
Yes.
Is that the case? You hadn't met any other kid that stuttered?
No. My awareness of the stuttering community is very, very new. I'll be honest. I never met anyone else who stuttered. Besides, I did go to a speech therapist in like a private practice mm-hmm. when I was a kid for a bit. And I knew that he stuttered, but like, you know, he was much older than I was. So that didn't register the same. He also sounded very fluent to me. So it didn't quite hit the same. The first person that I ever met who stuttered, the first female I ever met who stuttered was Eileen Chu. I didn't meet her till I was 23. And then, so I met her because she teaches the fluency course at Georgia State. And then when she opened up like in our very first class and said that she stuttered, I was like, oh my gosh, like there's someone else out there. And I immediately emailed her and I was like, I stuttered too. Can I meet with you? And she has been so amazing and so encouraging and has kind of been my person to go to with questions. She's given me a graduate assistantship in her lab, so I'm getting to research stuttering, which is very nice of her. So she was the first person that I ever really connected with who stuttered. And then this last summer I actually worked at Camp Say, which is part of the Stuttering Association for the Young. Mm-hmm. And I was a camp counselor there, and so the camp is pretty much only for kids who stutter and like mm-hmm. maybe family members or siblings. Mm-hmm. So when I got there, it blew my mind. I would say probably 60% of the staff stuttered.
Wow. So there
was all these people my age who stuttered and all over the country, all these different life experiences and stories. And there were other like women my age who stuttered. Mm-hmm. And I was like mind blown that there was all these people out there, and I had felt so alone for so long. And then when I was talking to one of them, they told me about the National Stuttering Association mm-hmm. and how they were resources there and a convention that happens every year. And I just had no idea until like August. I had no idea any of this was here until August. So I'm very new to the community, but I have been really enjoying it so far. I can't believe it was here the whole time. I just had no idea.
I know. I kind of had the same experience. Like when I finally, you know, had that enough and I had, you know, I wanted to like come out, you know, for the first time ever, I Googled stuttering, you know, and all of a sudden all these resources came up and there was an NSA group and a therapy program at a college that was 15 minutes away. And oh, I'm wow. like, oh my God, like that was there like all the time. And, you know, and like, had I known about that, who knows, my life would have been, you know, very different, you know. And I've also often said that as a child, if I had been lucky enough to meet an adult who stuttered, I think that that would have also been life-changing also, because, you know, like I had no idea that you could grow up and be successful and have a life and, you know, have romantic relationships as a person who stuttered. I just thought you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, so well, I'm so happy that you found the community. Welcome.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here. I do think that I relate to you in that aspect of just meeting one person would have changed so much. And I wish I wish I had stumbled upon it earlier. I think I spent a lot of like my teenage years trying to search for some kind of community. When I was an undergrad, I thought joining a sorority would provide that for me. And don't get me wrong, I made a lot of awesome friends from that. But I will say having a community of people who stutter just hits differently. It's just a little bit easier to relate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, like suddenly you're not the minority. You know, like, you know, like when 99% of the world is, you know, fluent and the only 1% of the population stutters like us, you can really feel, you know, like, God, like, you know, I'm the minority within the minority. So suddenly when the table flips and you're in the majority, it's so empowering, right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Now, how did you hear about Camp Say?
I think my mom had stumbled upon it when she was just on the internet. And I had been a camp counselor before at a different camp in North Carolina, not stuttering related at all. And I really enjoyed my experience there. So I think she was just trying to find other kind of similar opportunities. And she found Camp Say. And then I was like, oh, that's cool, but the applications have already ended. So then I kind of forgot about it. And then, you know, a pandemic hit, and then I definitely forgot about it. And so much had changed. And then probably like April is kind of when I was starting to figure out, oh, I'm really interested in working with people who stutter. I think this is like the big passion of mine, something I'd like to do for a career. I was just trying to find opportunities to work with anyone who stuttered, because like I said, the only people I knew who stuttered was like me and Eileen Chu, and that was it.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to find something. And then I stumbled upon job opportunities at Camp Say, and it fit my school schedule like perfectly. I just finished the semester and then I could fly out the next day and go to camp. I had lots of camp counselor experience. So I was like, this would be really cool. I am going to get there and I am going to change the lives of all these kids who stutter. And then I got there and it was honestly my life that changed. So I found the application in like April or May. And then I was there in like the end of July. It was a really fast turnaround. I think I was probably one of the last people they hired.
Wow.
So it was honestly like, if anything could be fate, I think me finding Say was fate, because then it led to so many other opportunities and open doors.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's like, that's such a heartening story.
You know.
So the camp experience was in person.
It was in person. Lots and lots of COVID protocols kind of had to be taken into consideration. There was lots of testing, and our cabins had to all stay separate until all of the all the campers tested negative. So it was, so at the beginning it was very interesting just because it was like all the cabins couldn't interact, but because of that, I got to bond with my cabin a lot.
Yeah.
So I really got to know them because they were the only people I could be around. I was with 14 to 16 year olds, which was like a really, really fun age group to be around. Yeah, I loved it. I'm really hoping to go back this summer, fingers crossed, everything works out with my school schedule, just because it was one of the best experiences I've ever had, all COVID precautions included. It was great.
Awesome. It sounds like a lot of doors opened.
Yes, for sure.
Do you think you'll get involved with the NSA and maybe sometime come to a conference?
Yes, I really want to. I'm really hoping to come to the conference this summer. Like I said, everything kind of hinges on my school schedule, but I would really love to go. I have like a group of friends that are all SLP students, or like very new SLPs who stutter, and they all know each other through the NSA conference, and then I met one of them at Camp Say, so I kind of got looped in.
Yeah.
And so they all know each other from the NSA conference, and they talk about it very, very fondly. Like they talk about all these people that they know and keep in touch with. And I would really love to be a part of that. So yes, I really want to be involved. I did come to the NSA group for like women who stutter.
Good.
And I really enjoyed that. So yes, yeah. I am trying to become more involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we got connected. Dr. Chu told me that you were there and that you really liked it. And we were just so happy to do that. And we're excited to like continue that. So it's nice that you were there and got something out of it. I hope that we will meet in person one day at one of the conferences. In 2023, the conference is going to be back in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it'll be a lot closer for you.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, that's not far at all.
Yeah. 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 California, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to swing that or not. And I'd be really sad because I've been going since 2006 and have not missed one, you know? So, so I've been to like 15 in a row.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I really don't want to miss one, especially since my very first one in 2006 was in California. So it would be in like a nice, like closure, you know, to go again. But, anywho, like we're running out of time. It always happens, right? Like whenever I'm talking with another person who stutters, you wouldn't think stutterers have so much to say, but we do.
oh, yes, for sure. I do feel like a lot of people have that perception, but it is not true at all.
It is not. Like sometimes it's hard to get me to shut up because I think like I felt like I wasted all those years of not talking. So now I'm making up for it.
For sure.
Yeah. So in total wind down mode, you mentioned when you were introducing yourself that you're a real foodie. What got you interested in cooking and baking and stuff?
I have just grown up in a family of people who are really awesome in the kitchen. My father's side of the family has a lot of like Italian influences. Oh. So there's a lot of like Italian cuisine there. And then my mom's side of the family, there was a lot of like Southern food. So those are two, like these are two cultures that are very, very passionate about food.
Yeah.
I've always just really enjoyed the process of putting all these things together to get an awesome final product in the community that food can bring.
Yeah.
I feel like so much conversation and bonding happens over a meal. Yeah. So it might as well be a really good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree. Like it seems like most of our social activities centers around food, you know, parties and celebrations and you know, Super Bowl's coming up, and you know, that's all about food, right? But it's interesting because you mentioned Italian and Southern, like that's a pretty neat fusion, you know, different styles, but still very much comfort foods.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Caitlin, this has been so amazing. You just have a wonderful story that I know a lot of student SLPs are really going to relate with. And thank you for being so honest and, you know, sharing your story, which, again, is going to make an impact on a lot of people. Thank you for being a guest.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
It was fun. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.